Hear that, Mr. Anderson? That is the sound of inevitability.
Bitcoin is happening. And those who are denying it are going to get more and more panicked and freaked out. As I have said many times, all it has to do now is survive. If you want to hear how far in the sand the skeptics' heads are in March 2021, stick around, because it's time for a Guy's Take episode. What is up? Welcome back to Bitcoin Audible, the place where you will learn everything about Bitcoin. It will be read, it will be explained, it will be commentated on by Guy Swan, yours truly. That is me, the guy who has read more about Bitcoin than anybody else you know. Welcome back to the podcast. I have been hinting at a stupidly bullish episode here for a couple of weeks, and here we are. Get ready, this one is going to be ridiculous. Getting all of this together earlier today just kind of had me laughing, like sitting by myself laughing. My wife was kind of looking at me weird because we were just chilling on my laptop. And just at how utterly absurd this year has been so far. And we are going to get into all of it real fast. I want to talk about two awesome products that damn near feel like they were made for each other. And, of course, two awesome sponsors. The first is the lowest fee, easiest way for an automated Bitcoin savings plan. I use Swan Bitcoin for literally all of my Bitcoin purchases that are not directly on Lightning. Like, that is basically Swan Bitcoin, that's it. You set it once, you can buy every day, week, paycheck, month, whatever it is. I do a weekly that I'm probably going to be bumping up soon. And you get the lowest fees, and it's done. It's done. It will automatically buy every single week, and then you can put in your wallet address, and they will even automatically send it to your hardware wallet. And speaking of hardware wallet, you know which one to get. The BitBox O2 is a sleek little dude. It is Swiss-made with unbelievable security, easy to set up, quick to create backups and restore it. And the desktop and Android app is as straightforward as it comes. Check out Swan Bitcoin for your Bitcoin savings plan and the BitBox O2 for your Bitcoin savings vault. Both of them at guyswan2ns.com. So how do we start into this? This is literally, I've just got like a ridiculous list of like just basically bullet points of things that I've been wanting to mention on the show. Probably start off with actually there's been like two things that happened last year that I still wanted to comment about. At least I think they were last year. The Comptroller of the Currency announcement. I've got a link here. I wanted to point this out. Oh no, it was this year. It was right at the beginning of this year. God, it feels like it's been ages since this happened. This was like 2 months ago. So the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency, I heard this too, specifically on Tales from the Crypt. There was an episode where Matt O'Dell and Marty Bent went at it because Comptroller of the Currency basically stated that banks are openly allowed to, like, there's essentially an open permission to use stable coins and, quote, blockchain technology to settle payments between banks and, you know, other financial institutions. Now, Marty thought this was pretty bullish and seemed pretty jacked about it. And then Matt O'Dell kind of poo-pooed all over it, all right? So he was like, this is not important. He didn't care. And I started writing notes while I was listening to that one, thinking about doing an episode titled Matt O'Dell is Wrong, but never actually got the motivation to do it. And I was still working on other stuff. But I think Matt O'Dell is wrong. And I'm going to get into a little bit of why. I think this is actually a big freaking deal. And it's got nothing to do with stablecoins. So I completely get Matt's dismissal of the announcement, I guess, because it's like stablecoins. And stablecoins are like not really that interesting. It's not a endorsement of Bitcoin or anything like that. And it's just banks doing bank things and using a new tool, right? So I completely understand the perspective. And in a general sense, or at least the way Matt described it in his framing, if I accept his framing that this is about stablecoins and using blockchains, quote unquote, then he's perfectly right. And within that context, I absolutely agree this is kind of a nothing burger. But I disagree with the fact that this is the way to frame what's important about this announcement. I think two things here are key: compatibility and concessions. So when the letter or the announcement brought up stablecoins and quote-unquote blockchains, they used, there was a very explicit set of terms that you could use: nodes to validate, store, and record. So they mentioned specifically the idea of running a node to as a form of validation and confirmation of the movement of funds. And they compared it explicitly to other settlement networks, Swift, Fedwire, these other things that in place of these established settlement networks, you could use a stablecoin, a blockchain, run your own node, and do this with some alternative system, and it compared them to it. Now, this is basically an open invitation to use Bitcoin without ever actually saying Bitcoin. There's no distinction in this announcement that says, accept Bitcoin, you can do this. And so when you're looking at developments like Strike and NYDIG and these other systems that are explicitly trying to build out Bitcoin infrastructure for international remittances and settlement, then the OCC's statement is basically an open invitation to use these things if you would like to and if they're better for you. But that aside, because there's nothing in this announcement that suggests that or that this is going to happen anytime soon, it may very well. I still think it's in the works for 2021. I think you're going to see something exactly like that. But let's set that aside because this has nothing to do with the OCC statement. The first important thing here is compatibility. Banks and the financial system use incredibly old code standards. And this is largely across the board. In fact, there was a piece that we read by, it's like Galloway Money, I think. I don't have it off the top of my head, but it's something about Lightning as a retail, as retail payments, or as a retail payments layer, I think. I'll look it up and make sure I have it in the show notes. But it's a brilliant piece just talking about kind of the structure of payment networks, our current infrastructure, and what it would look like to move over to something like Bitcoin and Lightning. And one of the points that he makes that just really stuck with me was that Visa actually, and this is, again, this is very common with just these entire systems in general, but Visa still relies on mainframe computers and a messaging system that was defined in the 80s. And it's a system, it's a standard that has so few developers that it actually requires a huge cost just to access the network. So it's really a mechanism that they actually use to create a wall around Visa so that they can keep fees high. And because no one else uses it, only Visa, and Visa has such a monopoly on the payment system, they get to monetize the fact that to use Visa, you have to use their outdated crap that nobody actually knows how to program for. And so the companies that do integrate with it, that do leverage this and get in, like Stripe, they take advantage of it because they've got their foot in the door. They've got, one foot on the other side of the wall. It's explicitly closed source, hard to use, and poorly known so that they can make more money. Now imagine an open source standard replacing something that's been stuck like that since the 80s. And not only that, what are banks going to have to do? If they start using stablecoins or blockchains, even if they've got nothing to do with Bitcoin, what are they going to have to do? They're going to spend tens of millions, hundreds of millions of dollars training their employees on how to use hardware wallets, on how to best manage their keys, on how to store seeds, on how to run multisig, on maybe on their stupid proprietary blockchain, maybe on their Goldman Sachs coin, stablecoin. But so what? They're going to have Bitcoin-compatible hardware wallets, and they are going to do all of Bitcoin's homework for us. You know, this is like the analog phone company integrating USB. They are plugging Bitcoin into the system and into the heads of everyone in the banking system without them even realizing it. Like, even though I have the Bitcoin-only version of the BitBox, I could hold stablecoins on it too, right? Like, I learn and use the same device to use a stablecoin as I do to use Bitcoin. Again, I don't because I think it's bad for security. I like that low attack vector, and you know, just give me Bitcoin. I don't need to convert to a stablecoin to do remittances. Like, I just give me Bitcoin. But nonetheless, it's on the same device. The keys work the same. The hashes work the same. The transactions are formatted the same. The multisig looks the same. Those employees, the tech support, the companies, the owners, they will be taught how to use Bitcoin if they start doing anything with stablecoins. And it also opens up, because it's an open source standard, because it's actually an entirely new, basically a new form or a new standard for a messaging system, is that even if they create their own stupid proprietary blockchain, is that it actually opens them up to compete with Visa. Because integration between one and the other won't be difficult anymore, whereas Visa has had this walled garden around doing that and executing something like this. This actually opens up, it basically gives the opportunity to throw the incumbents in disarray while Bitcoin is establishing its foothold to dominate everything. Now, the other point is concessions. This is a huge concession that Bitcoin is winning the infrastructure game. Again, using the internet analogy that I love so much, is that basically the internet has become the backbone of all communications networks. All the physical lines are just various mediums for how we connect to the internet and run packet switching protocols. Like, our satellite communications is essentially internet communications. Our phones are over the internet. All of it is on the internet. Practically all of it is internet-based, even like isolated mission-critical networks like air traffic control and specialized military and satellite networks. They all use the same technology. It's just variations to account for certain limitations like time constraints or delays that are security concerns, and so they have to specialize it or tweak it to get their own network that's not being crowded out by the actual internet and run their own infrastructure. But I still call that the internet. It's still packet switching. It's the same design. It's the same fundamental idea. It's still just software that you run on the same computers under the same common standards. And of course, it's all compatible. This was a major shift, right? Like, the networks prior to this were all entirely separate. They were all their own separate walled gardens. Exactly like Visa, as an example, is that because our money and our payment systems are all quote-unquote whitelisted systems where only approved people can participate, approved customers, approved business partners, approved banks, and then they build their own walled garden network as the authority, as the central source of truth. Our monetary networks are very, very much like the analog isolated communications networks before the internet. And what makes this shift significant is that it's like the shift from communications networks before everything switched over to the internet, that they were trying to run their own little mini internets. It was basically the first step in our direction, in the internet's direction, that said, shit, I have to do something about this, because this is going to eat my lunch if I don't respond. That response then was another proprietary network that used similar packet switching technology that they could close off and think that they could sell cheaper access to. That's stablecoins, right? That's CBDCs. That's the first concession on the road to a Bitcoin standard. Just like in the history of BitTorrent, we talk about how BitTorrent forced the industry, the copyright and music and media industries, to admit that the internet was around and it was going to fundamentally change their business models or they were going to go out of business. We talked about those concessions that they fought and fought and fought until they finally basically stepped back and admitted the customer is going to have more control. The customer is going to be able to buy one song rather than the entire album. And if we don't accept that, they're just going to get it for free without us. What the OCC statement was, in my opinion, was a canary in the coal mine about the fact that they are admitting, and they know full well, that Fedwire, CHIPS, SWIFT, these settlement systems around the world right now are going to be replaced. And what they think is going to happen is that they're going to react quickly and they're going to try to build something that replaces it before Bitcoin replaces it so that they can retain as much control as possible. Basically, there is going to be a massive shakeup in the settlement, in the financial and monetary settlement systems around the world, simply because Bitcoin is here. Not even by using Bitcoin, but simply because they have to respond to the fact that it is here and there's nothing they can do about it. And like I've said about, and again, it's not like what they're building and doing is not interesting, or at least not very interesting to me, because I think the far more important development is Bitcoin and sound money. But dividing up their attention to create more upheaval and disruption in the old infrastructure and put even additional pressure on the incumbents, aside from the monetary reality that's shifting so quick, it means they're going to have so many wars to fight that the war with Bitcoin is going to be unwinnable. I really think it already is, but it's just going to accelerate the realization that that is the fact. And at the end of the day, Bitcoin and Strike and Lightning Network is only going to work that much better, and remittances are only going to collapse that much faster. Like remittance companies, like international settlement companies, will only collapse that much faster if you can easily just move to into and out of a stable coin on either end and immediately deposit it into your bank and have funds. Or obviously you just have someone who could accept it. I don't know. It just felt like a big white flag to me. They were ceding ground and that we just made a massive shift forward by that statement and that admission that this is where things are going to go. Now, the CT letter from yesterday. This is one of the most bullish things I've read in a while. And from the kind of legacy fiat mindset of someone who has the expert opinion or someone in the know that you're supposed to listen to, this is basically one of those people who is more in the know than anyone and would be the very expert you would ask about energy efficiency and how to meet regulatory standards and what role Bitcoin would play. And Roque has basically shared the exact things that we have been saying for years about Bitcoin, and that it is going to be an amazing tool for meeting the Paris Agreement and the new restrictions and how to actually lower greenhouse gas emissions and waste and inefficiency. So if you haven't listened to yesterday's episode, you have to. This is a Norwegian oil giant named Aker. And they've established a new company called CT, whose sole focus is to work within the Bitcoin ecosystem, to invest in projects and companies, and the company itself will keep all of its liquid assets in Bitcoin. The casual mentions of cypherpunk ideology and libertarian ideals and the fact that this is something that's very fascinating to him and an important part of why Bitcoin exists is just really kind of epic, honestly. You know, this is the economic power of Bitcoin changing a perspective. This is how the culture changes. I mean, go back 6 years. Who would ever have suggested that in a shareholder report of the establishment of a new company from one of the largest oil and gas energy production companies in Scandinavia, that he would be talking about the value and the importance of cypherpunk ideals? Think, just take a second and think about that. This is how far we've come. So anyway, the first point that he brings up is that they're going to be Bitcoin hodlers, and that this is a company about, you know, running Bitcoin payment services, or excuse me, servers, and becoming active contributors in the community. Now, the second point that he brings up is that they're going to establish mining operations that transfer stranded or intermittent electricity that do not have stable demand, wind, solar, hydropower, allowing them to turn the lost energy into economic assets that they can use anywhere. He said there's this quote, and it's so good, quote, "Bitcoin is, in our eyes, a load-balancing economic battery, and batteries are essential to the energy transition required to reach the targets of the Paris Agreement. Our ambition is to be a valuable partner in new renewable projects." The reason nobody puts up windmills or solar panels, and that it is such a nightmare to actually make good use of that energy, is because it's never being produced at the time that it's being needed. It's being produced at a completely random time. It's got nothing to do with demand. They can't turn the windmill on and generate more wind when too many people turn on their stoves at once. And you know what it makes those projects? A liability. It makes them huge pains in the asses that you can't do anything, that you only get actual productive economic use out of like a third of the energy that they produce, and the rest of it you have to pipe into the ground because the wind's blowing and nobody turned on their TV. Bitcoin is an economic battery that can turn that lost energy into valuable assets that they can use anywhere, and it doesn't lose value if you transport it. It doesn't even have to be transported. It exists everywhere all at once the second you create it. This company has created a subsidiary specifically to take advantage of this brilliant aspect of Bitcoin mining and the protocol. I don't know how that is not, like, that's the craziest bullish thing. Think about the other corporate entities, the other energy companies that are going to be reading this, because this is a massive competitor. And what happens when Aker is meeting their regulatory guidelines and meeting standards that none of the other companies can actually do? What happens when they sit down and read this thing? What you think they're going to dismiss this? At this point, I think the energy FUD is dead. You know, like, it doesn't make any sense. And anybody who actually has a thought in their head knows this by now. Anyway, we'll come back to it in just a second. And I don't want to spend the entire episode on this, but the third point that he brings up about what this company is doing is that they will build and invest in projects and companies in the Bitcoin ecosystem, and that this is where their true passion is. Their home game is industrial applications. This is a huge step for the maturity of Bitcoin, this is going to be a huge step for the maturity of the mining ecosystem. And this is, we talked about this many times on the show before and hinted at what this might look like. This is what it looks like. This is the marriage of energy production and Bitcoin mining. These two topics will go hand in hand henceforth. They are going to be the same industry in some form or fashion, similar to how communications networks or the communications industry is the internet, right? Like, they are inseparable from each other, whether or not it's specifically about what them using the internet in one form or fashion. They do many things. It's just about communication, really. And just in the same way, this is going to be about energy production, and this is still an industry for energy production, but it is going to be as tethered to Bitcoin mining as it can get. Every single watt of wasted energy that does not have to be wasted will be diverted into Bitcoin mining. But anyway, back to their third little piece here is that he also talks about micropayments and Lightning and his excitement. He specifically talks about an interview with Jack Mallers, a conversation with Jack Mallers and other people, and like how Jack Mallers sent the money all around the world, and they sent it like Oslo and Ghana and all these things. Just, it's so cool to have somebody, you know, I can't imagine what it would be like to experience that just live, like while you're on your first trip down the rabbit hole, and that this all happened since last summer. That was another thing. He literally says that, like, you know, I was drinking from the fire hose and, you know, listening to podcasts, reading everything I could get my hands on, watching videos, et cetera, et cetera. And to have someone, again, it's kind of like MicroStrategy and Michael Saylor, like the speed with which some of these people can now actually go down the rabbit hole. Like when I got into Bitcoin, there were none of these resources, right? Like it was a nightmare trying to piece some of this together and get some semblance of truth out of it. But the ocean of content out there, the incredible amount of content and the incredible content that is available now. I mean, I never have a day where I don't have something. Like my backlog on this show is hilarious. Like I have way more articles than I could ever actually read. I just pick the best ones, at least in my opinion, and that I'm able to get to. But these resources are invaluable. You know, like, and this is case in point. These things, the books, the articles, the podcasts, the videos, they were his trip down the rabbit hole. His list of people just damn near sounds like my follow list on Twitter. Seyfedin, Andreas Antonopoulos, Adam Back, Nick Carter, Christopher Cole, Ray Dalio, Michael Green, Hugh Hendry, Jack Mallers, Rao Paul, Chamath, Anthony Pompliano, Pierre Richard, Michael Saylor, Elizabeth Stark, Eric Townsend, and Grant Williams. I don't know, I just think it's awesome. It's hard to discount or maybe to overstate how powerful it is to have such an ocean of amazing content to devour that someone like Roque here and then like Michael Saylor could basically go from zero to psychotic Bitcoin, you know, evangelist in 5 months, 6 months, and like the thing they are suddenly the most excited about is getting involved in the Bitcoin ecosystem, building in the ecosystem, and, you know, basically putting everything on the line, putting entire treasuries like Michael Saylor into Bitcoin and being like, I'm here for this, right? Like this is the bet of the century. And speaking of bets, the most bullish perspective in this whole thing is that there is an entire section where he breaks down why not investing, rather than arguing that you should invest or arguing that there should be, you know, some small portfolio position or something like that. He argues the reverse, that it's unbelievably stupid. The riskiest thing that you could possibly do is not invest. That you must put something in it or you're a fool. He even references hashtag get off zero. He talks about the asymmetry of the incredible upside and the very limited downside for, you know, a reasonable position to be put into it. And you know, he makes a comment that, you know, what you should really get fired for is saying no and losing out on a once in a lifetime opportunity. This paragraph just really stuck with me. It says, Bitcoin may still go to zero, but it can also become the core of a new monetary architecture. If so, one Bitcoin may be worth millions of dollars. The asymmetry is interesting to a portfolio. People who know the most about Bitcoin believe its future success is nearly inevitable, whereas the other camp thinks that its failure is equally certain. Status quo is not possible. So I think kind of what he's getting at here with the last couple of lines is that there is not going to be any consensus because, and there is, there's a huge divide between the people who know about Bitcoin and the people who don't know about Bitcoin. And they are both incredibly certain about their assessments. But what's funny is that you have to admit, or you have to recognize something about that, is that the people who know are certain of its success. You can't find many people who can actually explain Bitcoin, that could explain how it works, that could explain the monetary history, that can explain the economics involved, who aren't massively, massively bullish on Bitcoin. It is almost invariably someone who knows next to nothing about it, and in two paragraphs would fail to mention or fail to even recognize things that are absolute Wikipedia page level knowledge about it. Those are the people who think Bitcoin's going to fail. You know, I would say it makes very little sense to listen to that group. At least when it comes to Bitcoin, certainly. Then he gets into his meeting with Jack Mallers, which is just so cool. God, to be mentioned like this, like, God, hats freaking off to Jack Mallers. Everybody just needs to give that guy a round of applause. If you share a post or do anything underneath or around this, if you're listening to this episode and you get a second, just say congratulations, Jack Mallers. Like, what you're building is awesome. This guy just dedicated, like, multiple paragraphs to talking about meeting Jack Mallers, about experiencing his energy and enthusiasm. I felt old in his company, but very emboldened. And I love this line, too. I lost out on mobile communications. I didn't invest in internet companies. It was only recently that I started to invest in and build software companies, and I love it. And when I realized how much brain power goes into Bitcoin, I saw the future in the making. And, you know, we saw that this rough statement, I think it was Paul Tudor Jones who said something almost exactly like this, is that the amount of just intelligence, the amount of people who are unbelievably passionate and incredibly smart about so many different topics are in Bitcoin. He said damn near the same thing. This is an absurd level of winning that we are doing right now, fellas. Anyway, there's so much. I could do a whole episode on this, but I should just go ahead and kind of just skip to the end here. This was such an amazing piece. He said, you know, you can only challenge your preconceived ideas when you're willing to go outside of your comfort zone. Bitcoin inspired us to challenge our intuitive understanding of money. And then he hits on the energy FUD, which I just think is hilarious the way he frames it. It's perfect. He's perfectly right. Is that if they're right that Bitcoin is valueless, they have absolutely nothing to worry about. So the three framings he goes over is that either, like, you have to talk about the energy expenditure in regards to or in comparison to the forecast of what Bitcoin is, right? Is what is Bitcoin going to do? What is it going to mean in the future? Well, one, it's either a speculative bubble that's going to be implode and be worthless. Two, it's a digital scarce asset that could replace gold as a store of value. Or three, it's a monetary architecture that will serve as the core trust and verification layer for numerous types of transactions. And he rightfully says almost everybody who bitches about Bitcoin's energy expenditure believe it's the first one, that it's a bubble that's going to implode and be worthless, which means you don't have to do anything. If you're right, just wait. It's done. Congratulations. Miners don't expend energy because it's worthless. They expend it because it's worth a lot. So if it's going to be worthless, they're going to stop mining. And there's absolutely nothing to worry about. I love that. I thought that was just a great, if this is what you believe, well then shut your mouth. You've got nothing, just sit around. It's worthless, right? So if you're right, if you're correct, you got nothing to worry about. So shut your mouth. Otherwise you're wrong. But we won't talk about that yet. But then he goes into the gold narrative and talks about, like, all of the externalities and the problems with gold and how, you know, this would be absolutely worthwhile in that context. And then, you know, hits the last one, the last point, which is basically the perspective that they hold is that this is going to be a new monetary network and it's going to facilitate stuff all over the globe. And in that case, Bitcoin is a far superior alternative to both the previous systems and the energy cost for running those things, while in the meantime, allowing them to actually make use of its benefits to renewable energy projects and stranded and wasted energy, and then also taking note of the reality that it's the reward is actually going to decrease in the future, and it will literally only be if it actually produces direct value to the settlement systems and the financial security of the world that it will actually reward anybody in fees. It's only commercially and economically viable if the value of verifying these transactions without a trusted party is sufficiently high. So it implies high demand for the network's architecture, which means that useful applications creating tremendous amounts of value have been built on top of the network, and therefore it would survive and consume electricity only if it was actually creating significant value, and that's it. It's kind of a like nail in the coffin on this point that is just great. Just quote, even completely disregarding. So this is, again, we're dropping the other element that CT is basically formed for, that the company is basically made to take advantage of, and that we've talked about so much about how the energy, the economic benefits of Bitcoin and energy production and renewable energies is actually a huge net positive, in my opinion, and through all the study and things that we've read and covered. But, quote, even completely disregarding Bitcoin acting as an economic battery that may improve the economics of renewable projects, which could accelerate the installation of intermittent sources of electricity, we don't see a long-term problem related to Bitcoin's electricity consumption. So taking that out of the equation, they still think the Bitcoin energy FUD is nothing but FUD. Quote, Bitcoin can be verified, divided, reassembled, stored, and transported at virtually no cost. It's the perfect scarce digital asset by design. All that is required to keep the network running is allocating the cheapest electricity in the world. Electricity secures the network. No trusted parties or people with guns are needed. I call that progress. Amen, brother. Anyway, we're done with this piece because we got a lot to cover, and we're going to hit our sponsor really quick, and then we're just going to get into the most ridiculous list of crap that has happened. So if you haven't listened to the episode from yesterday, to the shareholder letter, you really need to, because I only covered a tiny, tiny piece of it, and there is so much bullishness in that letter. It's one of the most bullish things I've read in quite some time. But I'm going to get something to drink really quick, and then we're going to see how quickly we can get through all of the insanely bullish crap that has happened in 2021. Swan Bitcoin. Investing in Bitcoin always comes with a barrage of questions like, do I wait for it to fall again? How much do I put in right now? Oh God, it fell 1% FOMO, my God. Stop looking at the charts. Stop trying to play the market. Set up a simple, automatic, no-hassle savings plan with Swan Bitcoin. Since their service went live, I have literally been buying Bitcoin every single week, and I have only just been upping the amount as I get more income flowing in. In fact, they paid me for this sponsorship, and I just turn around and give it all back to them. So honestly, they shouldn't even give me any money. They should just credit it to my account. And best of all, they auto-withdraw. And I don't pay the fee. They just do it. They batch them and they pay out to my hardware wallet. I don't have to touch anything. I just see that regular charge on my bank statement, and I see those transactions come into my hardware wallet, and I sleep so soundly, stress-free, like a beautiful little baby. SwanBitcoin.com/guy. That is my referral. And they give you some free sats after you set up your savings plan. Beat that. All right, so let's just dig in now. Michael Saylor I'm sure. I mean, we talked with Michael Saylor when they did their first massive purchase, and had an awesome conversation with him on the show. You can get that on YouTube or obviously in the feed. But then, not too long later, a couple months later, they issued a bond, and that's when we talked about on the show about the speculative attack and the I think they did it. It issued like 600 million or something like that at 1.7% interest. Basically, what they're doing is they're issuing themselves a debt at incredibly low interest and offering it up for people, convertible debt to like stock, and offering it up to buyers. And they ended up, I think it was. I wish I'd written this down. But I think it was that they were going to issue 400 million and it turned into 600 million because it got overbought. I can't remember. Maybe it was 600 and then went up to like more than that. I don't remember specific details, but it was overpurchased. And that has happened again. So they announced they were issuing another $900 million with a 0% bond. And they still got overbought, and it ended up over $1 billion. And I think MicroStrategy now, with a let me go to bitcointreasuries.org. Great resource, by the way, if nobody's been checking that out. Yeah, MicroStrategy, it seems, has, I think this is percent of Bitcoin is how much they have invested their company's worth into Bitcoin. It is 70% Bitcoin. Or I guess maybe that's just in relation to the market cap of the company. And their cost basis for all of this Bitcoin was 2.196, so $2.2 billion, and it is worth today $5 billion. This, obviously, that they are doing this again and that they get buyers so unbelievably easily at virtually no interest, well, literally no interest, actually. And that this is considered a smart move and that the value of their stock goes up. And this is when we're talking about $50,000 plus per Bitcoin. Yeah, that's crazy bullish. And you know, one of the things that just is an amazing development that we haven't actually seen in past bull runs at all, like we have seen it now, throughout this entire bull run and continuing with another sharp decrease in like the last 2 days, the amount of Bitcoin available on exchanges in exchange balances has been in a persistent stable decline. This is a strong indication that even large, even just everyday, even retail investors potentially, but the large institutional investors are buying and withdrawing Bitcoin to their cold storage, to their custodians, to futures contracts, to put in multi-sig arrangements, whatever it is. They're removing it from exchanges because they are not in a situation where they are just buying for a couple of days and selling at a profit. They are making established long-term positions. This is not a speculative fervor for them. They are here to stay, and they are removing Bitcoin from exchanges basically in testament to this. Now, the interesting thing is that you get these HODL waves, and during the early bull markets, this is something that we have seen in the past. And you can compare this to the 2017 bubble. And now, here is something that's really interesting, is that the decrease on exchanges only actually occurred from around June to December of 2016. So this was the very beginning of the bull market, and it bottomed out, and then the balance on exchanges started to increase, indicating that there was a retail speculative fervor basically building here. When the Bitcoin price was at like $900. So it was literally only when it was finally catching back up to the all-time high that it made a turn. It has not made that turn yet. We've been in consistent decline for balances on exchanges for a year. If that is any indication of the strength or the length of time we can expect this bull run to continue, that is a very, very strong indicator for a very, very strong bull market. And it also certainly suggests that we are not close to being over with this thing. In fact, we are just getting started. So the people who were like, oh, it's overbought, and oh, Lindsay Lohan tweeted about Bitcoin, it's the gig is up, we're going to have to short the market now. There's absolutely none of the fundamental indicators here, particularly when we're talking about the indication that there might be some sort of speculative fervor that is running out of steam here on exchanges. I don't think there's any indication of that at all. In fact, the indication is just the opposite, that we just kind of opened up the door and got this party started. Next big thing, we've talked about this a lot on the show, already on this episode. Jack Mallers is about to take over the freaking world. He has created a payments app that runs entirely on Lightning and Bitcoin, where he can send any currency to any country in seconds for essentially zero fee. This demolishes so many different things from so many different perspectives. Like even let's set aside for a second the remittance markets, the retail payment fee markets, the potential for Forex markets. Just everything is going to be eaten alive by this becoming the way to move around fiat currency. But it also demolishes all the butthurt altcoiners who are still whining that Bitcoin is too slow and expensive for everyday use. And I guess they will continue to do so until they are red in the face and veins popping out of their heads. Because of Lightning, I use Bitcoin every day and pay essentially nothing in fees. It gets increasingly easier the more that this has gone on. I don't really have any problems with it, but I have noticed that, you know, when I send a big payment, it might take 10 or 15 seconds, and that feels like it's happening less and less. I don't know if that's because the Bitcoin price has gone up, so the liquidity is, like, the liquidity that was already there is just worth three times as much. But, you know, I am running my own payment provider on the network right now. I've had channels, I've had my position established for, I don't know, 9 months, 10 months, a year now, on the BTC Pay server. I'm running my own payment provider. I am running my payment provider. Think about how crazy that is. For my website, the work I do online, the other people that I pay through the production company, I'm running my own payments provider. Anyway, Lightning is awesome. Jack Mallers is going to take over the world. And we'll talk about NYDIG in a minute, but not quite yet. So, who all has been jumping in the last couple of months? Mass Mutual, a life insurance company, has purchased $100 million of Bitcoin just at the end of last year. I think it's actually upwards of $400 million now. Because of what's happened in the price moves, because it was an announcement of what had happened a couple of months before, and the price had already kind of, I think it had doubled by the time they announced it, and now we're again doubled, so I really think we're somewhere around $400 to $500 million in value that $100 million purchased for them, a life insurance company. Square has increased their position again. I think the recent addition was like $90 million, if I remember correctly, but they continue to add it to their balance sheet. And of course, the big dog, Tesla, a small proportional investment for their company, but invested $1.5 billion into a Bitcoin position. Then Marathon purchased a $150 million position in Bitcoin. Stone Ridge, and we read the Stone Ridge shareholder letter that damn near reads like this. This Acre, the CT letter, it's crazy bullish. He comes to so many of the exact same conclusions he talks about and is working with Jack Mallers. They established NYDIG. Okay, screw it. We'll just go ahead and start talking about NYDIG there. So they're partnering with Strike and Jack Mallers. They are the ones that are making this happen. I mean, he even says explicitly, there's a great video from the Michael Saylor conference that he gave with four CEOs and executives and stuff at companies on their exact playbook and how they got into Bitcoin, how they think about Bitcoin. Basically, a crash, it was like a two-day crash course in going down the Bitcoin rabbit hole. And they covered, you know, tons and tons of information in that. And he sits down and talks with Ross Stevens from Stoneridge. And he all but basically says, we're going to obliterate remittance markets. We're going to destroy Western Union. Like, this is what they're doing this for. And they see the massive potential here. I don't know how you could work at Azimer or TransferWise or MoneyGram or Western Union and see that video, see that conversation, and not be scared to death that they are way behind the game already. And Lightning is just going to be an absolute powerhouse. It is going to be an absolute powerhouse. And even better is that we've got like a whole new slew of applications and stuff coming to the Lightning Network because the liquidity is now going to be there and because the infrastructure is being built out by a lot of these institutions, NYDIG, CT, Zap, and, you know, Jack Mallers, Strike, all of these things that are being built out. It's going to get even more reliable. It's going to get even better and it's going to get even easier to use. And an episode that we did not too long ago about ZBD, they announced they're pivoting from developing Lightning games specifically and instead building a platform, a system, basically a piece of software that you can run to integrate Lightning into the games that are already popular. We talked about in the episode Bitcoin's killer app, which is Skin in the Game. And I just think it was a brilliant move. And this is just something that has me really excited. In fact, I've got in the Audionauts group, in our patron group for Bitcoin Audible, I've got a good little group that are actually, I haven't gotten to play with it yet, and I'm kind of sad about it because I've just been busy. But they have been doing exactly this, running a little server and having their own little Counter-Strike tournament that pays out in Lightning, that like when you kill somebody based on like what gun you use and all of this stuff, you get more sats or less sats. If you kill them with a knife, you get a bunch. If you kill them with a bazooka, you get very little. And it rewards you for playing, and you buy it. It's just a really cool element in addition to the gameplay. And it's fascinating to see these things really start to come to fruition. And I think this is going to be a big part of it because, you know, microtransactions and, you know, even Roke, it says in the CT shareholder letter, he's really excited about all of these applications and getting a better user interface for these things and really rolling this out and seeing what people build with this. And I think this is that stage where this is going to get really, really exciting for exactly these sorts of things. And then the mining industry is just so much is happening there. I mean, CT is a perfect example of this. But this was actually a point that I noticed that I don't think I've even brought up on the show yet, but there's a Genesis Mining, the Boden Business Agency, the Research Institute of Sweden, and I think there were a couple of others. But they're using Bitcoin mining to produce heat for greenhouses so that they can grow food like all year round. They can basically better control the conditions and rather than the local operation having, having to offload that cost to some large established conglomerate or whatever that can eat the cost and cut it up among 30 different greenhouses, like huge commercial institutions that can actually eat that cost, it can actually make the local production more sustainable. Because that cost actually becomes an asset to them because the very thing they are using to heat their greenhouses and produce locally sourced and locally available food, they can make money off of that, or at least they can get some of that cost back because it is not just a cost. They are mining Bitcoin with it and heating the greenhouses. And they actually estimate that this can actually lead to a 5 to 10% improvement in the self-sufficiency of local operations and food production. And this is enough to, you know, margins are incredibly tight. So 5 to 10% additional self-sufficiency, like an improvement in efficiency in doing that, this could potentially make a huge subset of local organic food production viable that simply wasn't before. It is another, it's just another brilliant way to take the exact same concept of Bitcoin as an economic battery and use its one externality, heat, for a different purpose. You know, this is the idea of, I'm going to heat my house with a Bitcoin miner, and even if I only make pennies for the amount of heat that I'm producing, it doesn't matter because it's pennies that would have just been thrown away. Again, it's about waste and inefficiency being eliminated, and every single place where we need heat, every single place where we have excess energy that can't be used in some other way, divert it into Bitcoin mining and make it productive and make it secure a sound monetary asset that is globally available and can be used anywhere at any time. I don't know, just another really cool example of that being taken advantage of. I thought that was neat. And then Okung, Russell Okung, the football player, the whole pay me in Bitcoin thing happened. And again, we're right back to Jack Mallers and Strike. It's just really hard to overstate how incredible what is happening over there really is. And, you know, if every major payment processor and money transfer company is not working their asses off to copy him, they're idiots. So what are the bullish things we got here? Let's see. Oh, the dollar has practically become a parody of itself at this point. The M1 money supply chart has shot up to a degree that calling it a hockey stick just doesn't even do it justice. Our dominant competition is a joke, is an absolute joke. The dollar is a disaster of a currency right now, and so is our political system. So competition isn't looking all that bad right now. Kind of clear skies on that front. Okay, another. This is really interesting. And CT, I didn't even mention this earlier, but CT has partnered with Blockstream, and they're going to be working with Lightning. They're going to be working with Liquid and the potential for using Elements to create synthetic assets and maybe even, I think he even hinted at issuing stock. I can't remember exactly how he framed it, but using sidechains, taking advantage of second layer technology, both with Lightning and with Liquid, and the fact that they're actually partnering with Blockstream for their mining operations and to build out their infrastructure is really, really, really exciting. That's something that was something that I did not see coming. And Liquid, actually, the sidechain has added 6 new members earlier this year, I think it was, maybe even more now. But Liquid is actually growing quite a bit in its federation that secures the sidechain. But one thing that's really cool about that is that, I mean, Blockstream is a major factor in, you know, development, and they've worked on Lightning and stuff, but they've been a little bit, it kind of felt like to me that they were in the background and I didn't hear much about them, and almost like the Liquid sidechain was a little bit static. Like it wasn't super exciting to me. Everything seemed to be happening on Lightning. And it's really exciting to see that they might have been doing a lot in the background for the infrastructure side of things, and that this was actually their focus, and that they're really trying to pull the rug out of, you know, massive institutions in the realm of maybe even the New York Stock Exchange. In we're talking about energy infrastructure and making big moves in that direction rather than specifically focusing on Lightning, because, you know, Lightning is busy off doing its own thing. But I just really like to see a different second layer solution getting a lot of attention, because Liquid has not been very out there thus far. I think this is a pretty big announcement from the Blockstream side of things and the development and infrastructure side of things. And this is going to make me very keen on keeping a much closer eye on Liquid and Blockstream this year. So that's really cool to see some pretty significant moves on that front. The Human Rights Foundation says lots of really great stuff with grants. There's been a huge push for helping out development and funding development, which is wonderful to see because that is another thing that I think has been stagnant and a lot of people have been taking for granted is that like, oh, the developers are the developers and somebody's going to take care of it. And it's cool to see these companies that have made very big positions, Square is another big one, actually step up and start to fund development. And they are making more than just an investment in the asset. They are investing in the ecosystem. They are trying to see this thing built out and they are trying to see it secured and maintained indefinitely going forward. They are trying to make that happen. And that is really, really cool to see. But the Human Rights Foundation gave out grants to a couple of different areas. Spectre, they gave one to Spectre, and then Lot 49. So Spectre, I'm sure a lot of you already know, but they are a really fantastic wallet, just like desktop. It's a super, super powerful wallet. Tons of different features and customizations and multi-sig and all this stuff. Spectre's a really, really great one. I've been pretty jacked about it. And they have a DIY open source hardware wallet that's got a camera and a screen on it that I've been really wanting to check out too, but haven't gotten around to. Busy. Then Lot 49, the Global Mesh Labs company. So we had their CEO on the show and had an awesome conversation with him, but it was like a million years ago now, it feels like. But when they announced and like we're just really getting on, this is a guy who created GoTenna. And Lot 49 is a protocol that uses Lightning to incentivize infrastructure. So you can actually use the Lightning Network payments to pay for actual infrastructure, like physical infrastructure on the internet to route your payments, to route your packets and information on the network. So it would basically be a way to incentivize or create a foundation for a decentralized hardware infrastructure to get communications like MeshNet communications from one area to another and actually be sustainable rather than just a bunch of volunteer DIYers that, you know, would like to connect to some other nodes in the city. You could actually have a sustainable alternative internet infrastructure that could not be censored. And to see some excitement on that front and something, because I haven't kept up with that very well either. That's just really cool to see, and that the Human Rights Foundation has, you know, made a grant to them to continue the work. So a lot of other things, I got a couple little bullet points here about mining that I kind of skipped over. But Foundry Digital, I think it was Foundry that partnered with Hut 8. I've just got these separate, but I'm pretty sure they are working together. But they pulled on like 500 petahashes of mining capacity. Basically a lot happening on the North American mining front and investment in mining. In fact, Blockstream actually was one that I don't think I remember to put on this list. But they made a $25 million investment, I think, in mining. And I just think all of this is going to really change the ecosystem around mining and energy a lot this year. And this is going to be something to absolutely stay laser focused on, because this is going to be one of the really, really exciting areas. Now, something that I love and that I tinker with and I'm going to have every single one of are rewards, credit, and debit cards. Holy crap, this year is going to be epic for those. So we've already got one coming from BlockFi. Gemini is doing one. I want to say Coinbase. I heard Coinbase is, but I might be wrong about that. Fold, obviously. Fold app has their card. I've been using the crap out of it and spinning that wheel like crazy. But I've heard of a couple others too. I think crypto.com is going to be having a rewards card, or maybe even already does. I can't remember. But there's a lot of these popping up all over the place. And they're not like small things. I think they're going to be pretty big partnerships and they're going to make a pretty significant push into establishing a position. I think the era of Sats back is happening. The rewards that are going to happen with credit cards and being able to offer that optionality of a reward that you can store yourself and it goes up in value, that is a huge, huge untapped market that I think is going to grow at an incredible pace. And this is just kind of an indication of that exactly happening. I'm probably going to get every single one of them because I'm an idiot. Oh God. Taproot is on the way, right? So we're at the lot true, lot false step of this. We're in the last stage of Taproot activation here. And actually there's a new proposal that I haven't talked about yet on the show that might be getting some consensus on it. It is technically a lot false. If you haven't listened to the episode, it just means that we're going to try to activate it. And if we don't hit the threshold, then nothing happens. We basically just kind of start from scratch and try to change what needs to be changed. But the big thing here is that the time trade-off is much shorter. So the big issue with doing a lot false is that people are probably going to get impatient and run clients that say, we're going to get it at the end of this year. And, we're just going to split off if you don't do it. Because the change itself isn't contentious and it encourages miners to not dilly-dally and actually upgrade and prevent from there actually being a problem on the network. It says, we're going to do this, so get ready. But granted, a lot of people have issues with the seeming forced nature of such a change. But otherwise, we have to wait a year, and it might not work, and have to do all this all over again, yada, 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 headache. This new agreement is actually really great because the activation threshold is shortened all the way to 3 months. So it's kind of like, well, let's do it and give the option of just, on the other side of things, being fine about it and letting it not happen if we can readjust at the end of 3 months rather than waiting for a whole year. But maybe we can hit our target like ASAP. Right, we've got a lot of great consensus. Nobody is worried about this upgrade. It's been fully tested. Major support for it across the board. Let's see if we can just knock this crap out in 3 months, and then we'll readjust. So I actually think it's some people who were unable to agree kind of showed that they were both on board with this one. So hopefully that means, fingers crossed, We might be right around the corner to an activation method. OKCoin has integrated Lightning deposits. So now we've got Kraken, OKCoin, Strike. I'm missing one. Damn it. I can't remember. But they have integrated Lightning deposits. And this again is just major steps on the way to the Lightning build out. And in fact, on Strike, you could literally, I'm not sure if this is still the case, but that they were even giving sats back on Strike for depositing to OKCoin because it was saving them in fees. And I think it was a 2% discount. So you could actually go straight from your bank account with Strike deposit dollars into OKCoin using Lightning and then buy Bitcoin with 2% cash back. Now, of course, you could just send the Lightning transaction to your wallet and you would have Bitcoin. But still, I just saw that was funny, is that OKCoin was, there were sats back for depositing to OKCoin. Bitcoin usage and adoption has increased massively in Africa. And something that I just thought was kind of hilarious is Nigeria bans Bitcoin. And yet it is now the largest adoption rate of Bitcoin by population percentage in the whole world. So the place that has outright banned Bitcoin has the highest percentage adoption. Now, Nigeria has the highest percentage adoption of any country in the world. If that isn't writing on the wall for the ineptitude of, or the complete uselessness of, a ban on Bitcoin, I don't quite know what would be a better example. Okay, so the whole Wall Street Bets thing, holy crap, that was this year. So GameStop, this whole mess with Wall Street Bets, GameStop went to the moon, it crashed, went to the moon again now. But Bitcoin basically got on everyone's radar during this whole mess. And the most beautiful thing about really what Wall Street Bets meant, and I talk about this extensively in the Guy's Take episode, is that how incredibly low the respect and the average opinion is of the legacy system from the average person. So the hedge funds that were getting clobbered here, and the horrible, horrible manipulation that they underwent, and excused away in an effort to save their asses and just completely stick it to the retail everyday investors on Reddit. I mean, if you miss my guy's take on this, just the mere mention of this pisses me off. And you have to go, back and check it out. It is the most egregious and obvious example of fraud that you could possibly orchestrate. And it was out in the open, and it was with Reddit commentating live on the entire thing and right in the retail, the faces of all these retail investors. And yes, I shit you not, the SEC is investigating the normal ass people on Reddit who had nothing more than a buy and sell button on Robinhood and then talked about a golden opportunity. They are being investigated for market manipulation by the SEC. Not Robinhood, not Citadel Capital, not everyone who shut down the markets and let the rich cheating bastards exit their positions and open longs while the normies had no access, as the NYSE leader actually explicitly said, we shut it down, quote, so they could readjust their positions. Are they getting investigated? No, the Redditors are. Oh, it boils my blood so much. I'm not going to do a whole nother episode on this, but Jesus, it's unbelievable. But anyway, I think this is massively bullish for Bitcoin because they have no integrity. They are corrupt, evil pieces of crap. And they obviously have no respect to lean on. If there was any tiny semblance of it left over, the retail investors could not care at all. They were rallying. They were talking about losing all of their money just to stick it to these people. That is exactly the mentality we need for Bitcoin. People are sick of it, and Bitcoin fixes this. So join us, right? We don't have market hours. Nobody can freeze your Bitcoin account. You can't halt your transaction. They can't print paper Bitcoins. They can do nothing about your coins when they are behind your keys. If you got them on your BitBox, you solid, son. You ain't got to worry about nothing. That's a legacy system problem where all the money and ownership is granted by authority that is gleefully and often stripped from the people when it doesn't work out for their wealthy friends. Stay stuck in the Mesozoic or hang out with us in the future. Your choice. Own something or not. Just saying. All right, what else we got? Coinbase. Coinbase going public. Looks like they're going to have a ridiculous valuation. In fact, I actually saw somebody say there was an estimate. I don't think there's exact numbers on this yet, but that it might actually come out more valuable than Goldman Sachs, which is absolutely insane. So Coinbase is going public, going to be a public company. Everybody's going to get a $1,400 check. Yay, we're going to fix poverty in just a couple of weeks. Excellent news. Poverty is basically going to be gone. I think we fixed it this time, guys. Really, I do. Yeah, so that's bullish for Bitcoin. A lot of the best Bitcoin companies, at least in my opinion, are absolutely killing it right now. So Swan Bitcoin is exploding, and that's not a, like, they sponsor me and I got to say something nice about them. Like, they are exploding. I've been excited about it, even though they just started sponsoring the show again. But they rolled out a high net worth client and institutional service. Casa raised $4 million in seed funding. Unchained Capital raised $5.5 million in seed funding. And all of these guys have been hiring regularly. In fact, one of my good friends, Cameron, so congratulations for being hired at Unchained. That's super exciting. Bull Bitcoin and Wasabi gave out a bunch of development grants, so that's something else that back on the grant front. OKCoin also gave out a Lightning development grant on top of the fact that they have integrated and adopted Lightning Network and deposits. CoinCenter got a ton of money. I think that was from Square. I think it was like $1 million or something like that, defending Bitcoin in the political and legal sphere. And like a 1,000 people came to the defense of the developers, of the core developers, and are ready, myself included, to donate heavily to a defense fund if needed after Craig Wright threatened to sue them into the ground over the white paper. I gotta say, I gotta thank Craig Wright for his assistance in decentralization of Bitcoin, of bringing that attack vector to our attention and making it another major focus, and of course, decentralizing the white paper, because the white paper got posted in so many different places so ridiculously fast when Craig Wright said everybody had to take it down and cease and desist. I couldn't even keep up with it. So that's just really great. And, you know, that guy can suck it. And Nick Bhatia just released an amazing new book, Layered Money, a wink, wink. And I am keeping the audiobook from you guys just to be mean. Compute North raised $25 million for mining operations. BNY Mellon announced their Bitcoin strategy. I mean, they have just tons and tons. I think it was like $41 trillion in that bank. And they're getting involved. BlackRock is getting involved, the world's largest hedge fund. And they are moving into the Bitcoin ecosystem. Fidelity has increased their involvement and investment in the ecosystem. Canada just approved the first Bitcoin ETF in North America, which is kind of meaningless because that should have happened 3 years ago. And now it's like not really a big deal. But it's kind of great that it finally, you know, again, in the context of concessions, they're admitting defeat. And even better is it broke records in Canada. It traded $80 million worth in the first hour and $200 million by the end of the first day, which is apparently 10 times the average ETF performance when it is launched. And on the second day, it was $350 million in shares traded, which was three times more, not than the average ETF, it was three times more than every other ETF that was available for the markets that day. That is crazy. A second ETF actually got approved shortly thereafter from Evolve, so we're two ETFs down. And of course, NYDIG has applied for an ETF in America, so maybe we'll, in the US, so maybe we'll finally get one in USA. PayPal bought a different custodian. So apparently the BitGo deal that they were going to buy BitGo fell through and they ended up buying a custodian called Curve. But that's just a good development in my eyes because it shows that PayPal is really trying to make it so that they are actually holding Bitcoin and that people can actually withdraw Bitcoin. And maybe I can not have to call them a scam because right now they let people buy, but nobody can withdraw from their platform. And that means you're not buying crap. Do not buy on PayPal until we know for certain and you can immediately withdraw that Bitcoin to your keys, to your BitBox, to your Trezor, to whatever it is. Okay, so Colombia. This is something that's really cool and I've only stumbled upon recently. Colombia is running a regulatory sandbox experiment here, working on building an alliance between a subset of their major regulated banks and I think it was like 6 or 8 Bitcoin exchanges, and they released a statement clarifying that there are no prohibitions against companies in the country using their funds to buy Bitcoin. And this was all in preparation of roll out a regulated and official Bitcoin services and exchanges like regulatory apparatus into the Colombian economy. This is a pretty huge deal that I kind of felt like went completely under the radar. I didn't even really know about this until I was specifically kind of digging into little details. It sounds like Colombia is about to be really, really Bitcoin friendly. I don't know, just something to keep an eye on. Then Fast Bitcoins. So Fast Bitcoins is a way to buy Bitcoin with a voucher. I've never actually used it before. And as I understand it, it's only through you can only buy with Fast Bitcoins, and it's like available in like a pretty wide area, if I'm not mistaken. But the thing that I thought was really interesting in this news piece was that they are giving rewards back for people who now use Lightning. I did not quite see this as an outcome of or as a potential. Like, I saw the sats back with the credit cards and that, you know, that seems more obvious that as the availability and the popular recognition of Bitcoin becomes more prevalent, that people would want easy ways that aren't, I'm going to go sign up on an exchange, sats back for a credit card, just kind of seems like a very intuitive next step to get widespread adoption without the huge barrier to this is a wallet and this is a that and blah, blah, blah. Like, people don't have to get into Bitcoin. They can just use a thing that is kind of getting their foot in the door and getting them associated with it. But for businesses that are actually integrated with Bitcoin, that are working in the Bitcoin space and investing and building out infrastructure and trying to use Lightning, to integrate Lightning and still have to aggregate a lot of on-chain information, it actually makes sense for them to share the savings of the fees. So if they've got like $3 fees per transaction for a Bitcoin transaction on the main chain, on the on-chain Bitcoin network, and they can get more customers to use Lightning where they don't have any on-chain fees, or they just have to loop or something like that on occasion, if they give half of their savings to the customer, but then they end up with four times as many customers using Lightning because of actually giving back half the Bitcoin fee. That's what they're doing, by the way. I'm not sure if I made that clear. They are giving away, if you use Lightning, they are giving you half of whatever the Bitcoin fee would have been in basically a discount by using Lightning. And that's because then they don't have any, they're saving $1.50. Like in a $3 scenario, you would get $1.50 and they would save $1.50. So that if they get four times as many customers by offering that discount, they also save four times as much on fees. So it's actually better all around for them to do this. It's literally nothing but a net gain to try to encourage everybody to use Lightning. And that's just something that got me thinking that I had not really thought a lot about. And it just kind of sent me on this spiral of like, because it's nothing but a net gain, then their model is to be actually productive for some other reason. And what they actually do is incentivize and push greater and greater use of the Lightning network, which has the feedback loop on the continued adoption of Lightning, which makes Lightning all the more valuable and easier to use and more reliable for any amount of payment, and which makes it more useful for larger companies and doing more advanced things and easier for other applications like the ZBD thing and all of that to work. And that opens up new markets and way more interest in Bitcoin and having a free and a near free and instant settlement network, payment network on top of Bitcoin, which encourages more people to put Bitcoin on their balance sheet and start to actually invest in the infrastructure of Lightning and make use of it, which just number go up and everything, you know, Bitcoin takes over the world. I don't know, it seemed like a little thing, but it kind of got me spiraling as to how cool it would be to see a lot of that actually happening as Lightning reaches that point where it makes more sense to grow and push additional use of it because it's saving the company so much money to use it. Okay, Miami's mayor, Suarez, has gone all out. Open invitation to Bitcoin and crypto, wants it to be the Bitcoin capital. They're trying to be regulation friendly. They've even discussed having it integrated into the city, potentially having it on their treasury and allowing employees to receive Bitcoin as part of their salaries. That's big news. I had numerous interviews and he's just pretty gung-ho about it. Umbral is killing it right now. Full nodes are actually on the rise again from late last year, which is the first time since like 2017, I think. It's basically been in a steady, slow decline. We've fallen all the way down to like 40,000-ish nodes. I really think the recent rise, I mean, obviously Bitcoin's popularity is up, but I actually do think it has a lot to do with the rise of Lightning and the need and really the more tangible benefits of having a full node when we're talking about second layer protocols and needing to build these things out. And then equally important in the context of Umbral and MyNode and Nodal and all of these other great products is that it's just getting easier to use. And there's so many other services. I mean, six years ago, I was talking about, damn it, I wanted an Explorer on my Bitcoin node. Like, there was a lot that I just couldn't do with it. And now I got a one-click install on my Umbral node for mempool.space, and I have my own mempool.space. Block Explorer, mempool observer, the whole thing. All right, I'm going to try to get through the rest of this list really quick. We have gone on forever. The whole podcasting 2.0 thing is just still so exciting with Sphinx and with the Podfather, Adam Curry, and everything that they're building over there. I still will check back in on the thing, and, you know, I'm just every once in a while somebody's streaming sats to me, 20 sats every minute or something like that. And it doesn't even do anything. Like, I don't have to deal with it. Like, I'm not like dealing with a whole bunch of invoices. It's just straight to my Keysend. I've been meaning to move it over to my Umbral, but I've had a couple of issues with the last few updates. They were having that loading LND issue, and I'm still kind of like stuck in the mix right there. But I just need to get back to it. Then Lightning Pool, and the Shadow Chain implementations. This just landed, right? Like, this is basically brand new. And this is going to make it so that you can execute literally any arbitrary program, software, market order system, or whatever it is, non-custodially directly on Bitcoin. You know, every altcoin claiming that Bitcoin can't do DeFi now has to contend with essentially Turing completeness on Bitcoin, that all it needs is a hash, a time lock, and a multisig. That's it. And we've been saying this for years, that that's all you needed, but you know, they're still going to deny it and deny it and deny it until, like, it ends up being by leaps and bounds the largest market. And the fact that it's starting out by creating a proper interest rate, a proper cost of time for liquidity on the Lightning Network, is just super exciting. And then we have PTLCs finally coming to Lightning, which are basically the exact same thing for a Lightning transaction in a sense. Which means we can do all of this on the second layer. So not only will we be able to run any application, create a decentralized market and do it non-custodially, now we can also do it with almost no fees. We can settle everything instantly, and there'll be no borders or restrictions, because it's all we can all do even regulatory arbitrage against the financial regulations. Because again, like I said, it's non-custodial, and best of all, unlike some Ethereum project or whatever, if it gets stupidly popular, it does not break or collapse under its own weight. It works better because it builds out the Lightning Network and increases the liquidity and the chance of all the payments working flawlessly. That dichotomy, that prisoner's dilemma of an application on a blockchain versus an application on the second layer like Lightning, cannot be understated. That if something gets wildly popular on Ethereum, like CryptoKitties, it breaks every other application that's trying to run on Ethereum. It breaks anything that's trying to do micropayments, because everything gets bloated, the network gets bogged down, because it's not scaling. It is the opposite of scaling. It's stupid. It's costing everybody a massive amount because somebody is succeeding. Whereas the exact opposite is true on the second layer, and the exact opposite is true on Lightning. The more popular one thing gets, the better everything else works. And that is a feedback loop that you cannot fight. You can't fix by increasing the block size. You can't fix by splitting it up into shards. It will always be present if that is your engineering perspective on how to build it out. Okay, Voltage. Voltage now basically has a one-click BTC pay server and Lightning node service, which is super cool. I've still been using Luninode, and it's been working amazingly for, I don't know how long now, maybe a year. But that was just really cool. Voltage has amped up their offering, and it just looks like a really, really cool service. And that's just really new and a super easy way to just boot up Lightning nodes. Kentucky approved a bill to incentivize Bitcoin miners. So in the midst of all the energy FUD and Bitcoin hates the environment and all of this mess. In the middle of all this, Kentucky is inviting Bitcoin miners because they're not stupid. They know that this is actually going to be massive for them, you know, hitting regulatory targets and reducing emissions and reducing waste and inefficiency and make the economy more efficient. You know, that buyer of last resort prospect or characteristic of Bitcoin mining is showing its astonishing economic power yet again. Oh yeah, I got another bullet point here, and this one didn't get talked about a whole lot, but there was a source that said, this came out on January 25th, or that's when I saved it at least, that it appears the Harvard, Yale, and Brown endowments have been buying Bitcoin for at least a full year. So I guess you can add that to the treasury list of the list of institutions that are hodling Bitcoin. But one of the most bullish things, which I've saved for the end of this list here, and I'm going to be talking about it with Preston Pish tonight because I really want him to dig into it and I want to pick his brain on it, is that the Bitcoin market is developing its own interest rates. And the standard of Bitcoin loans is over-collateralization. We are creating an extremely robust financial services market and reserve policy that's not a fractional reserve, but a like multiple reserve. This is a big deal. Now, it's obvious that this was going to happen in a sense, but it's still just kind of remarkable to see it unfold because it's Bitcoin becoming the most powerful collateral asset on the market. The combination of multi-sig, proof of reserve, and the volatility of the Bitcoin price and the inability to print Bitcoin leads to one of the strongest, like most robust financial foundations, like for a financial instrument or a loan market. And what's crazy is that you would think that Bitcoin would carry a higher interest rate than something like a stable coin because quote unquote, Bitcoin is risky, but we've actually seen the opposite, that the Bitcoin-backed loans are seen as the superior collateral in the market. Bitcoin loans get a lower interest rate, and there is a growing market of institutional buyers selling the medium to long-term near risk-free Bitcoin futures and pocketing like 4-8% profit like nothing, and all they have to do is hold Bitcoin through the interim. The liquidity and financial markets in Bitcoin are maturing at a grueling pace right now, and we are establishing true, sustainable interest rates in our own separate financial system with its own pricing standards. These are the sorts of developments that get us closer to Bitcoin futures being used as the mechanism to create a business trade over months or years that use dollars and euros. This is the development needed to flippening of the Forex markets and the dumping of $5 trillion in daily volume into Bitcoin and cleaning up hundreds of billions in friction in these international markets. It seems like no big deal. It's like, okay, so there's an interest rate for a Bitcoin loan and there's Bitcoin collateralized loans. I mean, obviously, at some point we'd have that. But really, these are the things that start the infrastructure inversion of a financial system and enable the major institutions to actually have access to use Bitcoin, the network, as a monetary foundation, even doing all of the business they have already been doing. You need to be able to hedge. You need a futures contract. You need reliable liquidity. And this allows them to do that denominated in other currencies using Bitcoin and Lightning. And two steps away, there becomes a point where when one currency on one side gets weak or these companies are already putting 1-2% on their balance sheet of Bitcoin, why not just do the trade in Bitcoin? This is a major early step to a Bitcoin standard. Guys, it's f***ing March. Everything I listed here is just main bullet points that have happened. Basically, I think I did two that were at the end of December last year, and the rest of this has just been in the last 2 months. For the people, you know, if you still have your head in the sand over this, I don't know what to say. Bitcoin is about to turn the world upside down, and there is nothing at all but upside right now. And just to tack on, because these things happened while I was doing this recording and somebody in the Audio Nuts group basically dropped me a message with it. There's an article saying that an Israeli pension giant made a $100 million investment in GBTC. And this was only recently announced, but it happened apparently at the end of last year. So it only just went public. And the average price that they bought it at was actually $21,000. So it's already, their $100 million that they put in is already worth like around $300 million. $270 million or something. So add to everything that Bitcoin is going to rescue everyone's pension plans. Add that to the list of things to be thankful for today. And Larry Kudlow said on a Strategic Worldviews private call with apparently, and somebody tweeted this out, with an exclusive set of investors, that, quote, Bitcoin is inevitable. And I shit you not, this has nothing to do with the title of this podcast. I already had that name set like a week ago. And these two little additions have just happened today while this was being recorded. When I said buckle your seatbelt going into 2021, this is what I meant, and it is not going to slow down. By the way, the price has broken up through 57,000. We are essentially at the all-time high yet again, so we probably have a few really fun weeks ahead of us. All right, so I want to hit today's resource, fun Bitcoin resource, in just a second. Really quick, though, just a thank you to our two wonderful sponsors. We have a match made in heaven with two products that every serious Bitcoiner needs to use. A safe, secure, open source hardware wallet with the Bitbox O2. It's got an easy setup, intuitive interface, and it just works. Then, of course, the automatic savings plan at swanbitcoin.com/guy. A must for anyone who stacks sats. Stop watching the price. Stop stressing over when to buy. Just set it and forget it. And then today's Bitcoin resource is none other than Umbral. This thing is something that I really took way too long to finally jump on board with, but it is unbelievably cool. I've been wanting a plug-and-play node, essentially, for a really long time, and one that I could easily install all the different apps on and run a block explorer for myself, have my own Sphinx node, run Lightning Pool, everything like that, and this really does seem to be the ticket. They are at GetUmbrel, U-M-B-R-E-L, on Twitter, and again, this is not a sponsor, this is just a tool that I have recently fallen in love with and like to share those with you guys. So thank you so much for listening to Bitcoin Audible and this Guy's Take episode. This year has just gotten started. The year of 21, and what a year it has already been. Stay tuned, subscribe, listen to the best in Bitcoin made audible right here. I am Guy Swan, and until next time, everybody, take it easy. This has been a 111 production, and you are listening to Bitcoin Audible on the Crypto Economy Network.
This podcast is a part of the C-Suite Radio Network. For more top business podcasts, visit c-suiteradio.com.